So proud describes how I feel about Unitarian Universalism and how we stand on the side of love, welcoming and affirming people of every sexual orientation and gender identity. Now, it has not always been this way. We have come a long way. In 1967, the Unitarian Universalist Association conducted a survey about beliefs and attitudes, and the results may surprise you. 8% of UUs believed that homosexuality should be discouraged by law. 80% believed it should be discouraged by education, not law. 12% that it should not be discouraged by law or education. And 0.1% that it should be encouraged. The good news is this served as a wake-up call and got folks into action. 3 years later, in 1970, at General Assembly, a resolution was passed to end discrimination based on sexual orientation, and it called congregations to develop sex education programs that promoted healthy attitudes towards all forms of sexuality. 10 years later, in 1980, we voted to actively support gay ministers to find congregations. In 1984, affirmed our ministers officiating same-sex union ceremonies, and in 1996, pronounced our support for the right of same-sex couples to marry. However, a 1987 study still had found many negative attitudes, deep prejudices, and profound ignorance about bisexual, gay, and lesbian people that resulted in their exclusion from our congregations. So in 1990, the UUA established the Welcoming Congregation Program to increase understanding and acceptance. This fellowship implemented that program and voted to become a welcoming congregation in 2000, 10 years ago. Today, 80% of all Unitarian Universalists are part of officially welcoming congregations. How far we've come. I am so proud. And here we are today planning with great enthusiasm for the Pride celebration in Ashland next weekend. We will have two floats celebrating marriage equality with giant wedding cakes, thanks to Deborah Rothschild's vision. I'll be marrying two grooms from our congregation, John, who we just heard from, John and Stephen, who come almost every week from Mount Shasta to be with us. My colleague from the UU congregation in Livermore, Reverend Lucas Hergert, will be marrying two brides from SOU, marrying. I'm hoping that many of you will be marching beside us, singing, "Going to the Chapel." And we are a gentle, angry people, like we sang this morning. Now, these aren't going to be real weddings on the float, and that's fine. But it is sad to me that any same-sex wedding that I conduct here in Oregon won't be legal in the state's or the country's eyes. It was a real joy to live in Massachusetts, where I could religiously and legally marry any couple who wanted to express their love through marriage. One of the most moving weddings I've ever conducted, and the only one that ever started on time, was for two men, George and Joe. And this was a wake-up call for me, because when I was asking my typical questions about what family members would be attending and participating in the wedding, I didn't get normal answers. I heard stories of severed ties, condemnation, and loss. George is not in touch with his family of origin at all. He did, however, happily celebrate his wedding with his adopted family, with whom he connected in college. Joe had some family members come and some stay away. He is still connected to his family, but quite conflicted with many of them, and really still conflicted even within himself. Both men came from conservative religious backgrounds, and they have left those traditions behind, but they were so grateful to have a minister perform their wedding and bless their union. I was so proud to officiate at that wedding with the full backing of my denomination. We have come a long way. We see huge shifts in the popular culture. Think about the shifts we've seen in television shows. Do you remember Billy Crystal's character from Soap? Then Ellen DeGeneres coming out. Will and Grace. A current series, Modern Family, is about three interrelated families, one of which is two dads with an adopted daughter. A show or a book no longer has to be about gay and lesbian people to include gay and lesbian characters. It's become a recognized part of our diverse culture. The book Love Ya Bunches is about fifth grade girls, and one of these girls has two moms. Just as a matter-of-fact situation, not central to the story. We've come a long way. And we have a long way to go. People still try to keep these kinds of books out of libraries, topping the American Library Association's list of most challenged books 3 years in a row, 2006 to 2008, still number two in 2009 is the book And Tango Makes Three, which is based on a true story about two male penguins in the zoo who raise a baby penguin together. So this true story of two penguins is too threatening. It's the most challenged book. We have a long way to go. Now, here at Roof, we are so proud of Beth Coy. Where's Beth? Of Beth Coy and her tireless work for the repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy in the U.S. military. And that is honored in the current edition of UU World magazine. I'm so proud of this congregation and all that its members do to support equal rights. And yet, a member here has said, I love my religious community at Roof, but even here, I am afraid to hold my partner's hand. Those of us who are straight take it for granted that we can reach out and hold hands. When I dropped Adam off at the airport to fly to Massachusetts Wednesday, I didn't think twice about hugging and kissing him goodbye at the curb. I can put a picture of us with our arms around each other on my desk. I never have to find a creative way to avoid naming or using a gendered pronoun when talking about my beloved. We don't recognize the privilege that comes with being heterosexual, and we often don't realize the impact of what we say. Things like, my nephew's gay, but it's okay because he doesn't flaunt it, you know. He's normal. Oh, she's a lesbian, but she acts straight. Why do they have to be so obvious? These are things that people in this congregation say. Bruce Bauer wrote in The Advocate in 1998, straight Americans need an education of the heart and soul. They must understand how it can feel to spend years denying your own deepest truths, to sit silently through classes, meals, and church services, while people you love toss off remarks that brutalize your soul. Programs like Welcoming Congregation help with this education of our heart and soul. But we must remember that the straight folks in the room get to decide when and how to engage with issues of oppression based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Our bisexual, lesbian, gay, and transgender friends must consider it all the time. Now, of course, many minority groups are the target of prejudice and discrimination and oppression in our society, but most of them face that oppression in solidarity with their families. Not so for many LGBT people. In the face of the pain of disconnection from family and friends, LGBT people need sanctuary to heal. And for many wounded people, church offers such sanctuary. But many churches not only do not offer healing, but provide more disapproval and hurt to GBLT people. Now, this is especially true for children and youth who live at home with families who don't understand or support them and who may be taken to a church that condemns them. Of course, the good news is that we offer an alternative. We need to remember that we are providing sanctuary, and in many cases, we are offering a sense of family. And we are fortunate that many of us live in Ashland, a generally open-minded community. I know that here in Ashland, same-sex couples attend high school dances without fear. But it's not that way in most high schools. Junior high and high school is often the most difficult time in the life of a gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered person. You guys know that the word gay is just flung around constantly as an insult. Like, oh, that's so gay. You're so gay. Young people who are different from the heterosexual norm are harassed verbally and abused physically. As we heard in Joys and Concerns, in the past few weeks, there have been 5 publicized suicides of teenage men, men who have been bullied, taunted, beaten, and violated with a focus on their perceived sexual orientation, in many cases enduring this for years. Seth Walsh, age 13, from Bakersfield, California, hanged himself. Asher Brown, 13, from Houston, Texas, shot himself. Billy Lucas, 15, from Greensburg, Indiana, hanged himself. Justin Aberg, 15, from Anoka, Minnesota, hanged himself. And Rutgers student Tyler Clemente, 18, jumped from a bridge. These young men were in such despair that they chose to take their own lives. This is tragic. And we are also faced with the task of not demonizing those bullies who inflicted that suffering. But we could find an opportunity to ask questions that might lead to actual reconciliation, healing, safety, and acceptance for all people. What is it in our broader culture that in some way supports this kind of bullying? What adult behavior might these youth be modeling or reflecting? Now, the public outrage around these deaths indicates progress. There are programs being created and implemented to address bullying of all kinds in schools. However, conservative organizations like Focus on the Family are actively working against the inclusion of specific protections for BGLT youth, as they interpret this as indoctrination and promoting homosexuality. I just don't get it. But if you saw it that way, then it makes sense why they might be doing what they're doing. But there's no appreciation for this particular danger that LGBT people face. And, of course, there's this inherent assumption that a sexual orientation other than heterosexual is wrong. Many of these organizations use religious belief as their rationale, which is why it's so important that we, a religious body, provide an alternative voice. So much damage has been done in the name of religion. Too many people blindly accept a narrow and, I would say, inaccurate interpretation of their holy scriptures and cling to beliefs that diminish others. We offer an alternative perspective and a different interpretation of even what religion is. Peter Morales, our president of the UUA, writes that belief once meant what I give my heart to or what I commit myself to. Belief was linked to emotion and action. Belief did not mean agreeing with a set of metaphysical or theological propositions. True religion is about what we love, not about what we think. The key religious questions you and I must answer are these. What do we love so much that we are moved to tears? What do we love so much that it calls us to action? What do we care about so deeply that we willingly, enthusiastically devote our lives to it? Here ends Peter's words. For me, providing an open, joyful, genuine welcome to gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people is something I give my heart to and I commit myself to. Now, I can't explain why this is so important to me, but it is, and it feels like it always has been, well before I found Unitarian Universalism to find a religious foundation for this. It matters what we believe, as we heard in our teacher dedication. It matters that we offer a warm welcome. For me, reading about these boys who took their own lives has been heartbreaking. Dan Savage is a gay columnist, and he writes about matters of sexuality. And he was learning of these tragic suicides, and he was called to action. He said, "The reaction as an openly gay adult always when you read these stories, I wish I could have talked to this kid for 5 minutes so I could have told him it gets better. When a gay teenager commits suicide, it's because he can't picture life for himself that's filled with joy and family and pleasure and is worth sticking around for." So Dan made a video with his husband, Terry, because he realized he could talk to these kids. It's a project called It Gets Better. It's all over the internet on YouTube. In that video, Terry says, "I lived in Spokane, Washington, which was a mid-sized town with a small-town mentality. And I was picked on mercilessly in school. People were really cruel to me. I was bullied a lot. Beat up, thrown up against walls and lockers and windows, stuffed into bathroom stalls. People vandalized my car. And my parents went in once to talk to the school, and they basically said, 'If you look that way, talk that way, walk that way, act that way, then there's nothing we can do to help your son.'" Dan, in this video, says, "If my adult self could talk to my 14-year-old self and tell him anything, I'd tell him to really believe the lyrics to Somewhere in West Side Story. There really is a place for us. There really is a place for you. One day you will have friends who love and support you. You will find love. You will find a community." That's what Dan says. This is that place. We are that community. I am so proud of the welcome that this congregation provides. I will be so proud dancing with you at the Pride kickoff party on Friday night, marching with you in the parade and gathering together at the Lithia Park bandshell to stand on the side of love Saturday. Peter Morales says, "This is our spiritual and religious challenge. We must know what we love, and then we must let that love guide us." Please join me in singing "Love Will Guide Us."